All right, picking up in Genesis 31, if you remember where we were last time at the end of Genesis 30, Jacob was coming to the end of his additional six-year stay after the first 14 years, the two dowries paid for Leah and Rachel, and then he stayed an extra 6 years to be the keeper of Laban's flocks. And we ended up in verse 43. So the man Jacob became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys. And I added, like his grandfather Abraham. And so that's what we saw as we came to a close last time. So we pick up in chapter 31 this evening. Lord willing, we'll get through the whole chapter. It's mostly narrative. And so I think we'll just plow through this evening in anticipation of getting to Genesis 32, which is an intensely theological chapter next time. So let's pick up in verse 1. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father he has made all his wealth. And Jacob saw the attitude of Laban, and behold, it was not friendly toward him as formerly. Then the Lord said to Jacob, Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to his flock in the field and said to them, I see your father's attitude, that it is not friendly toward me as formerly, but the God of my father has been with me. And you know that I have served your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me. If he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth speckled. And if he spoke thus, the striped shall be your wages, then all the flock brought forth striped. Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. And it came about at the time when the flock were mating that I lifted up my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, Here I am. And he said, Lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Laban has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. And Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, Do we still have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? Are we not reckoned by him as foreigners? For he has sold us, and has also entirely consumed our purchase price. Surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. Now then, do whatever God has said to you. Then Jacob arose and put his children and his wives upon camels. And he drove away, and all his livestock and all his property which he had gathered, his acquired livestock which he had gathered at Padan Aram, to go to the land of Canaan to his father Isaac. When Laban had gone to shear his flock, then Rachel stole the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob deceived Laban the Aramean by not telling him that he was fleeing. So he fled with all that he had, and he arose and crossed the Euphrates River and set his face toward the hill country of Gilead. Now let's pause here. So what's ultimately happening here over the course of the next several chapters is that the 20-year stay of Jacob with Laban, and you remember how that was initiated, right? So Jacob stole the blessing from his brother Esau. He stole Isaac's blessing by pretending to be Esau and had his mother made some food. And so you remember that back a few chapters. And Esau then was having murderous thoughts towards Jacob. And so Rachel recommends to Jacob that he flee from Esau and head northeast to basically Aramea, right, to stay with her brother Laban, all right, who we saw earlier again in the Isaac and Rebekah story, all right. So this is where Jacob has been now 20 years laboring for Laban, okay, the first 14 for his two wives, and then ultimately his two concubines, and then the last 6 years as the keeper of his flock. So Jacob is now going to be called by God, as we'll see, back southwest into the land of Canaan, right, which is the land that was promised to Abraham and his descendants. And so over the course of the next couple of chapters, this is where we're headed. All right, so Jacob, in verses 1 and 2, he hears Laban's sons speaking ill of him. All right? And then he realizes that Laban himself is not happy either. And ultimately, it's because God is prospering Jacob as the keeper of Laban's flocks. Okay? So the Lord now sees he's prospered Jacob. And so now in verse 3, the Lord speaks to Jacob and tells him to return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I will be with you. This is a restatement of the promise that God made 20 years earlier, back in chapter 28, verse 15, at Bethel, okay, or Bethel, right? 28:15 says, God speaking to Jacob, and behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So 20 years later, okay, think about that. 20 years later, think about the last 20 years of your life, right? Jacob's now been waiting, and God finally returns to Jacob and says, all right, I'm about to make good on the promises I made you. So verse 4, Jacob sends for his two wives. He calls them out into the field. Probably a dual purpose here. One being privacy, and two being, it's abundantly clear, I think, from the last chapter, that Rachel and Leah don't always get along. And so I don't think Jacob wants to call, you know, Leah into Rachel's apartment or Rachel into Leah's apartment. So it's kind of a neutral site. All right. So there's privacy out in the field, kind of a neutral site. And now Jacob pleads with his two wives. Right. And so we see that beginning in verse 5, speaking to them about Laban's attitude toward him, but God's presence with him, and God's pouring out his blessings on him. He's justifying himself here. Verse 6, he has served Laban with all his strength. We will see substantially later in the chapter Jacob justifying himself before Laban, so we'll get to that in a second. Verse 7, he declares his father, or their father, has cheated him, right? Most notably in the whole marriage thing, right? Because Laban served him 7 years as a dowry for Rachel, the daughter whom he loved. And so Laban sends in Leah, and so cheats him multiple ways, including we see here in verse 7, he changed his wages 10 times. So he's jerking him around, certainly with regard to his pay, but now bears testimony to God's protecting him according to the promise made back in chapter 28. And then we have this summary of God, how God has blessed him and prospered him. And in verse 9, Jacob ascribes to God the fact that he has taken away Laban's livestock and given them to him. So it's fully God's intention here, as Jacob understands it, to prosper Jacob. All right? And so then there's this dream here about, if you remember it back in chapter 30, Jacob was talking about the speckled and the spotted animals. And so there's testimony here from God that it's God who's the one who's been prospering Jacob in the spotted and speckled animals. Verse 13, I'm the God of Bethel, the one who visited you 20 years ago. You anointed a pillar, if you remember, chapter 28, verse 18. So Jacob had fallen asleep on a rock. He had used a rock as his pillow under his head, as it were. And then when God had visited Jacob at Bethel, if you remember the ladder, angels ascending and descending, Jacob wakes up, surely God is in this place. He anoints the pillar with oil. And then here in verse 13, God reminds Jacob that he made a vow. So I just want to go back and look at that real fast. The vow that Jacob made, if you remember, picking up in verse 20 of chapter 28. Very clearly, Moses writes, then Jacob made a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me on this journey that I take and will give me food to eat and garments to wear, and I return to my father's house, and of all that thou dost give me, return to my father's house in safety, then the Lord will be my God, and this stone which I have set up as a pillar will be God's house, and of all that thou dost give me, I will surely give a tenth to thee. So this is the vow that Jacob made to God. And so God's reminding him of the vow that he made 20 years prior, and he's saying, now I'm going to make good on my promise. Arise, leave this land, and return to the land of your birth. So now, what are Rachel and Leah going to say, right? Well, apparently Rachel and Leah, their relationship with their father is not real good. All right, and so their testimony about Laban, right, is not surprising to us, I don't think. Their testimony is that basically Laban's cheated them as well, right? Do we have any portion or inheritance in our father's house? He has sold us. Do you see that verse 15? He has sold us. So their perspective on all this at the end of 14 years, if you remember, Jacob had nothing but his wives and his concubines and his children. He had no possessions. And Laban's daughters, Rachel and Leah, see that as basically them being sold off. Okay, everything that Jacob worked for, right, they had nothing to gain. Right? They had gained nothing after the end of those 14 years. He has entirely consumed our purchase price. Verse 16, surely all the wealth which God has taken away from our father belongs to us and our children. And so they're basically siding here with Jacob. They see all of this wealth, which now God, they affirm God has now transferred from Laban to Jacob. They see all that wealth with which Jacob has proffered as their own. And then they say to Jacob, now then do whatever God has said to you. So Jacob now gets ready to flee. Verse 19, it'll come again later, we'll see, but Rachel stole the household idols. In the original language, this is teraphim. It shows up several times in the Old Testament, basically Aramean gods. It most likely refers to ancestral gods, right? So figurines, perhaps, of dead ancestors, all right? We find it again, it appears in Judges 17 and a couple other places in the Old Testament, but clearly idols, not true worship, all right? Why does Rachel take the household idols? Different commentators say different things. Some actually give Rachel the benefit of the doubt as maybe trying to prevent her family from false idol worship. I think that's a minority view, and it's certainly not my view. I think Rachel is not real happy with her father, and so she's just trying to get out of Dodge with something, right? She's basically stealing it. And actually, if you go to Judges 17, you'll see kind of the same type of thing there as well. I think Rachel is just trying to get over on her dad by taking something that was of value to him. Okay? So Jacob is now headed back southwest into here, the hill country. So if you look at the map out of Paddan Aram, which is on the east, northeast side of the Euphrates River, so he's going to cross the river and head southwest toward Canaan, but he's going to do that through the land of Gilead, all right? And the land of Gilead is the region just east of the Jordan River. So if we could fast forward just a little bit to Joshua, as the Israelites are headed west into Canaan, the tribe of Reuben, the tribe of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh actually get their inheritance on the east side of the Jordan River. That is the land of Gilead. All right? And so this is the hill country just on the east side of the Jordan River, through which now Jacob is going to pass as he heads west into Canaan in a couple of chapters. Okay? So, verse 22, we pick up, Laban finds out. When it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob had fled, then he took his kinsmen with him and pursued him a distance of 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the hill country of Gilead. And God came to Laban the Aramean in a dream of the night and said to him, be careful that you do not speak to Jacob, either good or bad. And Laban caught up with Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the hill country, and Laban with his kinsmen camped in the hill country of Gilead. Then Laban said to Jacob, what have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword? Why did you flee secretly and deceive me and did not tell me, so that I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and with lyre, and did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters? Now you have done foolishly. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob. And now you have indeed gone away because you longed greatly for your father's house. But why did you steal my gods? Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, lest you would take your daughters from me by force. The one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself." For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. So Laban went into Jacob's tent and into Leah's tent and into the tent of the two maids, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered Rachel's tent. Now Rachel had taken the household idols and put them in the camel's saddle, and she sat on them. And Laban felt through all the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let not my lord be angry that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is upon me." So he searched, but did not find the household idols. Then Jacob became angry. Let's stop there, and then we'll get into Jacob justifying himself. All right? So Jacob takes off southwest, wives, children, camels, flocks, and then if I go back to verse 43 of verse 30, female and male servants. Again, he's very prosperous by this time. And so now he's moving this entire herd, right, out of Paddan Aram, or Aramea, and he's headed back toward Canaan. Laban finds out, all right? Laban doesn't find out until the third day. Why is that? Well, if you go back to chapter 30, if you see in verse 34, Laban actually was trying to get over on Jacob, right? And he had moved his flocks 3 days away, all right? So by the time Jacob leaves and then that message gets to Laban, Laban is already 3 days' journey away. So now it takes him 7 full days to catch up with Jacob, right? So he's got to recover the 3 days, takes him 4 more days to catch up with Jacob, who's already made his way into Gilead by this time, all right? Now, it's easy to understand why Laban could ultimately catch him, right? Jacob's moving with a relatively large flock, right? He's moving with wives. He's moving with reasonably young children, right? He's not moving very quickly, okay? And so ultimately Laban catches up with him about 7 days later, all right? And then he confronts him. But before he confronts him, verse 24, God comes to Laban in a dream, right? And he warns him, "Be careful, all right, that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." And we've seen this before. This is actually earlier in the narrative, way back in Genesis 24. So 24 verse 50. So this is in the narrative of how Rebekah is chosen to be Isaac's wife. Okay, we had Abraham's servant who came to Laban previously. And so the servant was recalling, Abraham's servant was recalling to Laban about, you know, all that God had spoken to him and how it had been revealed to him, how Rebekah was his wife. And so verse 50, after this long story, verse 49, the servant basically ends up and says, "So now if you are going to deal kindly and truly with my master Abraham, tell me, and if not, let me know that I may turn to the right hand or the left." Verse 50, "Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, 'The matter comes from the Lord, so we cannot speak to you good or bad.'" Basically shrugging their shoulders and saying, right, this is from God. We have nothing to say here. All right? So it's the same phraseology that we pick up here in chapter 31, verse 24. The warning from God, "Be careful that you do not speak to Jacob either good or bad." This essentially comes from me. That's the warning. So verse 25, Laban catches up with Jacob. All right, and they're in the hill country of Gilead. And Laban now confronts Jacob. He's upset. "What have you done by deceiving me and carrying away my daughters like captives of the sword?" Right? This is the pot calling the kettle black clearly here. All right? Laban has done nothing, essentially, over the past 20 years but deceive Jacob. And now he's upset because Jacob is trying to have a turnabout here. Okay? So he confronts him. "Why did you flee secretly and deceive me?" Verse 27, "Did not tell me, so that I might have sent you away with joy and with songs and with timbrel and with lyre." This is very interesting. And as I was just studying, there's a clear contrast here between how Laban wants to send Jacob away versus how he sent Rebekah away back in chapter 24. All right. If you remember back in 24, verse 60, there was this tremendous blessing. Okay? Tremendous blessing. 24, verse 60. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "May you, our sister, become thousands of 10,000s, and may your descendants possess the gate of those who hate them." Right? So they send Rebekah off with this great blessing. And basically, now, so many years later, Laban basically, he's not declaring that he wants to bless Jacob necessarily, but he just wants to have kind of a party here, all right? And so a very different relationship Laban had with Rebekah than what he has here with Jacob. Continues to confront him, verse 28, "You did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. You've done foolishly." Verse 29 is kind of an idle threat at this point. "It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob.'" And he realizes that Jacob was longing for home, verse 30, and then confronts him about the stolen gods. All right, so somehow Laban realizes, okay, perhaps they were in a prominent place in his home, and so as he's making up the 3 days' journey of his flocks, he passes through his house to gather up some of his kinsmen to go and chase down Jacob, and in the course of those events realizes that his household gods are missing. And of course he accuses Jacob of that. So Jacob responds, right? He said basically he was afraid, right? And we'll see this again in the next chapter. Jacob, for all of his deceitfulness, for all of the things that he has done during the course of his life, he actually has a pretty significant fear of man problem, right? And we see it manifest here in verse 31. We will see it again in chapter 32 as Jacob is preparing to see Esau, right? So Jacob is afraid, right? What he was specifically afraid of by his own testimony, verse 31, "Lest you, Laban, would take your daughters from me by force." All right, so he's afraid that everything he has would be stolen back from him by Laban. And then makes this vow, verse 32, "The one with whom you find your gods shall not live. In the presence of our kinsmen, point out what is yours among my belongings and take it for yourself." And Jacob says this righteously, frankly, in ignorance, right? Jacob has not been made aware that Rachel has actually stolen the teraphim from her father. So, 33 through 35 is the account of Laban going tent to tent, essentially looking for his household gods, not finding them. He goes into Rachel's tent, and she makes up an excuse, obviously, for why she should not get up off of the saddle of her camel. And so ultimately Laban searches, but does not find the teraphim. All right. So now he comes out. He's got to bear testimony to the fact he has not found the household gods, which he accused Jacob of stealing. And now Jacob is angry. Verse 36. "Jacob became angry and contended with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, 'What is my transgression? What is my sin that you have hotly pursued me? Though you have felt through all my goods, what have you found of all your household goods? Set it here before my kinsmen and your kinsmen, that they may decide between us two. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried, nor have I eaten the rams of your flocks. That which was torn of beasts I did not bring to you. I bore the loss of it myself. You required it of my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus I was. By day the heat consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep fled from my eyes. These 20 years I have been in your house. I served you 14 years for your two daughters, and 6 years for your flock, and you changed my wages 10 times. If the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen my affliction, and the toil of my hands, and so he rendered judgment last night. Right? So this is Jacob, 20 years, frankly, worth of anger, frustration, bubbling over. Right? And I think what we have to see in this, and we're going to see it more, especially in Genesis 32, is this is God disciplining Jacob. All right? There's no doubt about that. We talked a couple of times ago about the proverb, right, that the deceitful man, ultimately his deceit will turn back on him. He will dig a pit and fall himself into it, right? And so we see this playing out in Jacob's life, right? But we've got to see God's hand in it. Yes, God is prospering Jacob, but God is disciplining Jacob as well. And it will culminate at the end of chapter 32. All right, the ultimate disciplining of Jacob by the very hand of God himself. All right, so now here we see Jacob getting, again, turnabout, being fair play, but finally his anger bubbling over. He confronts Laban and basically declares his own righteousness. Right, and there's some things in here that we see that we haven't seen before. Right, so he calls him out, name the sins that I have committed against you. Right? You've rooted through all my stuff and not found what you were looking for. Right? And then we have this clear 20 years, and he says it twice, right? These 20 years, right? That the blessings of God, your lambs and your female goats have not miscarried, right? Nor have I taken from your flock to eat. Then here in verse 39, he was willing to be wronged on behalf of his master Laban, his father-in-law. So here we have testimony that whenever the beasts would come into Laban's flocks and would basically root through Laban's flocks and take portion of Laban's flocks for food, that Jacob never even told Laban about that. He counted it as his own loss. Okay? And so we do see, although Jacob has this clearly deceitfulness streak in him, we also do see a bit of righteousness here, right? And his willingness, we talked last time from 1 Corinthians 6, the willingness to be wronged. And so Jacob clearly also has that streak in him as well. His willingness, verse 40, to suffer like a good and righteous steward and servant of those flocks. We see him suffering in the daytime. We see him suffering in the cold at night. We see him suffering sleepless nights, right? And we know that shepherds have many of those as they're keeping watch over the flocks. And then accuses Laban, verse 42, if the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had not been for me, surely now you, Laban, you deceiver, you cheater, right, you would have sent me away empty-handed, right? But bears testimony to God upholding him, prospering him. He has seen my affliction, toil of my hands, and so he rendered judgment last night. So when God visits, the way Jacob sees this interaction between God and Laban in the dream, right, he sees God coming to Laban, right, as vindicating him, right, and giving him leave as he calls him back to Canaan, right? So Jacob sees himself as righteous in this whole thing, at least in his dealings with Laban. Again, we will see in the next chapter or two how God deals with Jacob coming back to Esau. That has not been made right yet. All right? But clearly, for the past 20 years, Jacob has been functioning as a servant of Laban, right, righteously. Now, we did talk last time, after the recording went off, about whether or not Jacob was dealing deceitfully, right? He's putting the sticks in the water. He's only allowing the stronger of the flock to mate and that sort of thing, right? And there's a sense in which Jacob, we saw some mysticism in that. And so Jacob is clearly arranging things to his own benefit. That much is true, right? But clearly here in chapter 31, his testimony about himself is that he has essentially done nothing but deal righteously with Laban and his flocks, all right? And he sees Laban's dream as a vindication of him by God himself. Okay? So, after being confronted, and after the righteous defense that Jacob makes. We pick up in verse 43. Then Laban answered and said to Jacob, "The daughters are my daughters, and the children are my children, and the flocks are my flocks, and all that you see is mine. But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? So now, come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me." Then Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. And Jacob said to his kinsmen, "Gather stones." So they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there by the heap. Now Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. And Laban said, "This heap is a witness between you and me this day." Therefore it was named Galeed, or Gilead, and Mizpah, for he said, "May the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from the other." And here's the terms now of the covenant. Verse 50. "If you mistreat my daughters, or if you take wives beside my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me." And Laban said to Jacob, "Behold this heap, and behold the pillar which I have set between you and me. This heap is a witness, and the pillar is a witness, that I will not pass by this heap to you for harm, and you will not pass by this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor, the God of their father, judge between us." So Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his kinsmen to the meal. And they ate the meal and spent the night on the mountain. And early in the morning, Laban arose and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. Okay, so verse 43, Laban, it's hard to sort of understand what exactly Laban is saying here in verse 43. Okay, it is likely what's happening here is that this is a continuation of what Laban said previously, which, if I take you back to verse 29, "It is in my power to do you harm, but the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, 'Be careful not to speak either good or bad to Jacob.'" This may be a restatement, right? So he's looking at all of this, all of these blessings, right? The wives, the servants, the children, and the flocks of Jacob, and he's seeing all those as his, in essence. Okay, and so he's sort of still flexing his muscles and his authority over Jacob, right? But also bearing witness here in the second part of the verse, "But what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne," right? So again, he's now under orders from God, basically to speak neither good nor bad to Jacob, and certainly not to do Jacob any harm, all right? And so the best he can do at this point, right, is make a covenant with Jacob. And actually, in some sense, it's a righteous covenant. And we see here Laban actually putting himself out on behalf of his daughters, right, in terms of a bit of a defense of his daughters, right? So they set up this stone and a heap of stones, right? And so the word Galeed, right, or Gilead, right, essentially means the heap of witness. So they've taken this pile of stones as an altar or a testimony, a visible testimony of the covenant that is made. And then in verse 49, Mizpah, which basically means watchtower, right? And you see that right there in verse 49, the word watch appears, right? And so you have this heap of witness and you have this watchtower, right, which are basically visible signs of the covenant that's made here between Jacob and Laban. And then the terms of the covenant are these. Verse 50, Laban goes to bat here for his daughters, right, and calls Jacob to treat his daughters well and to not take any additional wives. All right? So a righteous aspect here of the covenant, and calls God to witness for that. And then in verse 52, basically terms of peace or terms of agreement, that neither one of them will pass by that particular heap, okay, that particular pile of rocks, with the intent of doing harm to either one. All right? So this is the terms of the covenant made between Laban and Jacob. They have a covenantal meal, right? So verse 53, the God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, this is Laban speaking, the God of their father, judge between us. Jacob swears by this God, with whom he's now called for the second time, the fear of his father Isaac. Jacob offers a sacrifice. They have a covenantal meal, that is, they agree to the terms of the covenant. Verse 55, Laban arises early in the morning. He kisses now his descendants, right, his daughters and all of his grandsons, and then he goes home. And this is essentially the last time we see Laban in the text. He disappears from the Old Testament record. His name appears a couple of additional times in the Old Testament, but only he's not seen. It's only his name that is mentioned, and it most likely refers to a place, not a person. Right. So this guy now, Laban, who appeared on the scene back in the testimony of Abraham's servant going and finding a wife for Abraham, right? She goes to Laban's house. Rebekah's Laban's sister. He appears, right? And he appears here in Jacob's life, and then gone, disappears from the scene once Jacob is now into Gilead and headed back to Canaan. Okay? So, ultimately, here's what's happening. Jacob's on his way back to Canaan. Jacob is prosperous. He has received the blessings of Abraham, according to the promise that God made to Abraham, according to the promise that God made to Jacob at Bethel. And when we pick up next time, Jacob now has to face into his next fear, which is having to confront his brother Esau, whom he wronged substantially back a few chapters ago. Okay? Again, remember, as we head into chapter 32, right? The last time we see Esau, he's breathing out murderous threats against his brother Jacob for having been wronged of his birthright and his blessing. All right? And so with that sort of uncertainty, God is calling Jacob back into Canaan, into the land of Abraham. And he's calling him back into a very uncertain situation. The last thing Jacob knew 20 years ago was that his brother wanted to kill him. Right? And it's in the context of that larger story now, God is going to deal, literally, physically deal with Jacob and discipline him, right? In such a way that it's actually a very, very unique story in the scripture. So as we pick up next time, we will pick up in chapter 32, verse 1.